Welcome to another episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong, and he is as in good a mood as I have seen him in some time. I don't know. We'll start there. Tell us why. Why are you in such a good mood?
September is a good month in the Armstrong household, right? We have a lot of birthdays. My wife's birthday is this month. My birthday is this month. My oldest son's birthday is this month. It's a good month. It's a great month. And more importantly, the NBA season is right around the corner. Football is about to start. I mean, school is back. I mean, everything that's right about the world is, you know, it's that time of the year. You know, it's that time of the year. So I love September.
One of the things I wanted to get to before, and we got a number of things. We want to talk about Colin Kaepernick. We're not going to talk about the sitting, standing, kneeling for the national anthem. We're going to talk about why he is doing what he's doing and some potential solutions and where this has to go next. You put out on Twitter, now that you are new to Twitter, and by the way, I never gave you grief for, first of all, you joined social media. That was
a
shock.
Is this a BJ bashing again?
No. This is just a straightening of the record. This is getting our books in order. That's what this is, because you joined social media, which for those who know you, that was shocking enough for them. But then you're in Rio, and you do us the pleasure of sending us a selfie in Rio. I figured your kids put you up to it. I couldn't understand exactly how we went to you. It would be one thing if you're in Rio and you're taking a picture, but you took a picture of yourself in Rio.
You hit it. It's the things you do for your kids. My kids said, "Dad, when are you going to get catch up with the rest of us and communicate with us?" You know? I just want to communicate with my kids, and now I finally caught on to why no one calls me back. You know, no one talks on the phone.
No, they don't.
Yeah, I finally caught on to why I can't communicate. So yeah, they was like, "Dad, you got to take a selfie. You know, how are we going to know you're there?" Like, "Well, I could call you from there." "Well, we can't see you. You got to take a selfie." So the things you do for your kids, blame it on my kids. Now I'm in the 21st century, so I'm feeling pretty good about this.
Well, that is impressive. Now, the other thing you did is you tweeted out a photo of a book cover by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me. Is that the title of it? Did I get that right?
Yes. Yes.
And you said that you were going back to reread it. And I wondered what inspired you to read it in the first place and then reread it now.
As a youth, my parents always encouraged me to read. And one of the things that I've always been encouraged by my parents and my family is to have not only an opinion, but an informed opinion. So school and what was taught in the classroom just wasn't enough. I had to have an opinion outside of that, which often drug me to the library because the library allowed me to shape my own arguments the way I felt was important. But more importantly, I could dive deeper into any topic that I wanted to dive into. So the library was always a friend of mine. I always felt comfortable there because there were no limitations when I did get to the library. Mr. Coates here, I think, is if anyone has had an opportunity to read him, I think this guy is like incredible. He's current. He has his pulse on his topics and what he brings and his research. And more importantly, he supports his arguments with facts and places it out there for you. Not in a way that's threatening to you, not in a way where he's forcing it down your throat, but he gives you an opportunity to reflect and come to your own conclusions based on the facts and research that he's done. I think he's a brilliant writer. I think anyone who wants to be informed in the topics of history in this country when it comes to African Americans, it's well advised to read him. I think this is required reading by anyone who wants to educate themselves and what's going on in the world today as far as equality, unjust, you know, justice here in America, especially when it comes to people of color. I think the guy is just a terrific writer.
Hmm. Well, that brings us to Colin Kaepernick. And while this is predominantly an NBA-centric podcast, we talk about everything. And it's basically talking about life through the prism of the NBA. And what Colin Kaepernick is doing crosses all lines. It has less to do with the NFL and really has to do about real life and has to do a lot with athletes and minorities in athletes and the juxtaposition of teams and all of that, and including the national anthem being played at sporting events and how we treat that. And as anybody who hasn't been under a rock knows, Colin has decided to protest what is going on in this country. The, as you said, the injustices, the lack of equality and equal treatment, particularly when it comes to law enforcement and people of color, and has used the national anthem and his platform as an NFL quarterback to stage a protest and make people take notice that the flag and the anthem do not, the ideals represented therein are not being reflected in the way that we conduct ourselves in society today. We are doing this podcast after the game in San Diego. It was Military Appreciation Night. And I've said this, anybody who listens to my radio show on Bleacher Report Radio, Sirius XM, knows that I thought it was as brilliant a demonstration as Colin Kaepernick could have possibly had. Because he has not only brought our attention to this, but he's demonstrated how we might actually come to some solutions. And he did that by basically reaching his hand across the aisle and talking to another former NFL player, a long snapper, Nate Boyer, who also is a Green Beret, has served in the military, and said, look, I don't want this to be about the protest. I want this to be about the subject that I'm protesting. So how do we go about doing that? And Nate Boyer suggested, well, rather than sitting tonight, how about taking a knee? People will notice, it will continue the conversation, but in some ways it will look more respectful. And Colin didn't have to do that. What I admire, truly admire, is the fact that he said, okay, you know what? I'm going to give that a try. And teammate Eric Reed joined him in that. And then afterwards said, I'm going to donate $1 million to a variety of charities. Like, he took all the steam. And I had to laugh at the people booing and saying, well, that's un-American. Colin Kaepernick is doing more for this country right now, I guarantee you, than 99% of the people who booed him for the stand that he's taking. And it's been a conversation, it's been a point of conversation on my show all week long. And we've had people calling in, people of color, people who served in the military, people whose parents served, and have talked about their history and what they've gone through and how much they appreciate this. And it's been both white and black. I can't tell you, I don't know if we've had somebody call from the military our show and say that they were opposed to what Colin has done. So I ask you, if you were a teammate of Colin Kaepernick's, how would you approach this subject? And I know I'm being specific now and not giving you a chance to speak to the subject itself, but I want to start there. Like, because I'm interested. I honestly, I don't care whether you sit, stand, kneel, whatever you do as an individual. The anthem and how you respond to it is not as important to me as the subject itself. But we are talking about this crux of the NFL and Colin now bringing attention to this. And I think it's interesting to me as to how teams, teammates, the league respond to the point that he is making. And I'm putting you in the crosshairs by asking you, if you were a teammate of Colin, because I was asked the same thing on air, what would you do?
It's very interesting then to watch this unfold. You know, understanding is the solution to every problem that I've ever faced. If you understand what's going on, then you have an opportunity to come about and be able to discuss it. If I were a teammate, the question itself would bother me, because the bigger picture for me is always the following. That question limits the me of who I am, first of all. But more importantly, I think it limits the broader picture. It fails to recognize the diversity that exists in our culture. Therefore, my question would be, what should I do? That young man has taken a position, okay, out of respect in this country. I respect his position. Now, what should I do? There is nothing for me to comment about his action and respect the fact that's his choice. That's his choice. What needs to be done? What should be done? Would be my question.
So this is, but you agree with the cause. You agree with what he is protesting. You agree that this is something in our society that needs to be addressed and changed or improved. No?
This is what I agree upon. I always come to my own conclusions. Every day in my professional life and my private life, I challenge myself. And you've heard me say this many times. I challenge myself with my own truth. Every problem that I face, whether it's an executive, whether it's negotiating on behalf of a client, whether it's having a discussion with my kids or my family or parents or whomever, I have to take ownership of what happened. Now, what that young man is doing speaks for itself. But the thing that is striking to me, which is a bigger topic, okay, is let's talk about the issues and deal with the issues, because that's all that matters here. I think right now, if we really want to solve some problem and get somewhere, clearly it's going to be, how is that going to happen? It's going to involve us working together. But in order for us to move to the next step or the next phase of this, we have to own what really happened here. Now, when my kids stop bringing me their problems, then I failed as a parent. When the people that I work with and I'm responsible to in my office, when they stop bringing me their problems, I failed as a leader and an executive. And when our youth, and you've heard me say this many a times, I love our youth today because they're fearless, Rick. They're fearless. Now, first, let's own the problem. Let's own the situation. And let's get to the facts. That's why I love Mr. Coach, because he brings the facts. Let's own it. Once we own what the situation is, we take responsibility for the situation. Not his actions, but let's deal with the real issues at hand. Because, see, I'm a little older than that young man, so I've seen this. I was born in the 60s, so I saw it in the 70s. I saw it in the 80s. I saw it in the 90s. I saw this in 2000. So now I'm not up in an uproar. I'm a little bit more seasoned to get emotionally invested into something that I've seen for over 40 years.
Sure.
Therefore, let's take ownership of what's going to happen, because that way we can move forward. But if we cannot continue to take a blind eye and act like it didn't exist, we cannot continue to sit here and be like, oh, look at him. Okay. This is America and people have a right to express themselves. But us who have a little bit more experience have an opportunity to offer solutions to a problem that exists. We have the responsibility as experience. Experience has taught me a lot, Rick. Now it's time to get to the solution so that we can move forward. Because this has been going on for quite some time.
Grant.
And the only way I've ever found to solve any problem is first you got to own up to what it really is. Now it's time for everybody to come to the table and say, what is the problem here? And let's take ownership of the problem so that we can work together to move forward. Because what he does, he's taking a knee. Let's just deal with the issue, because the issue is one that's been here for the longest.
Right.
So let's deal with it. And now the thing that I think is interesting is the demographics of where it happened. At a sporting event, I thought that was interesting.
For all those with the booing and the reaction of the crowd, and that I don't know if, I mean, there's a lot of parts to this. First of all, the way that this is portrayed, like I didn't see the cameras looking to see if there was anybody who was also sitting or kneeling in the crowd,
right?
If there was anybody joining him, there wasn't the exploration of that. I question the way that Nate Boyer is being presented alongside Colin Kaepernick, because both of us have been in the media, and he's almost being presented as the hero in this thing. As I look on my TV screen and I see the visuals that are given, and that troubles me. The reason that I asked you as a former athlete and a former teammate is because that is part of it. Like it or not, people are shaping an opinion, and I'm not dismissing or not glossing over that the solution is the real thing here, but I want to draw upon your experience, the challenge that each and every teammate and player on that team, particularly of color, faces in trying to make a decision on how do I support this idea? How do I acknowledge this idea? How do I point it in that direction? And at the same time, follow my conscience, because I'll tell you, I'm older as well. And I've grown up with respecting the flag and respecting the anthem and conducting myself in a certain way. That is intrinsic to me. And I appreciate the life that I've been given living in America and what I've been able to do and provide for my family. I wouldn't want to live. I've been around. I've been to Eastern Europe. I've been to China. I've been to Africa. I've been to a lot of places. That I get to live here and live the life that I do, I appreciate that. And I appreciate the principles upon which this country is built. I do. So when I was first asked, what would you do? I said, it would be hard for me not to stand, because that's so built into me. Even though I fully appreciate, admire, and support what Colin is doing. The more I thought about it, the more I'm in a position where I would think, no, I'm either in or I'm out. I'm either representing, I'm either supporting him in every way possible, or I'm not. So what am I going to do? Even if it's uncomfortable for me to take a knee, even if it's uncomfortable for me to sit, if I really believe in what Colin is doing, then how can I not do the same? I know it's the optics. I know it's not the actual issue. But honestly, there has to be that first place that you cross and say, look, I also believe that making a show of things is not always the answer. A lot of the best work gets done outside of the public eye.
This, to me, it's not a struggle.
Okay. So what would you do? Or what do you think you would do?
What I would do is what I always do, is I would begin to educate myself on the issue. Is this a new issue? The answer to me is no. Have we discussed this before? The answer is yes. How long have we discussed this?
Have we really?
Absolutely.
To this degree?
You know what the first thing that popped in my mind when this came about? Does sports really matter? I play professional sports.
Yes.
I haven't had one person come up to me since I retired. Not one that have come up to me and said, hey, BJ, how you doing? You know what they always say? I loved you when you did X and X with the Chicago Bulls. I loved watching you play. Oh, you were my favorite player. I haven't had one person, come up to me and said just this simple thing. Hey, BJ, how you doing? So my question to all of this is, does it really matter? Does sports really matter? Because if we really want to get somewhere with the issue, let's take it to the people who are experts in the profession. You want to talk basketball? I can speak on that. That's my lane. Mm-hmm. You really want to talk about equality, justice? Let's take it to the people who are experts in that field and offer us real solutions. Not when that camera is on so we can just have our opinions. No, let's take it to the people who actually, they do this for a living. The thing that I would do and the thing that I do is to provide and give people the path. Mr. Coach, that's someone that can take you to the answers. So I'm not buying into any of this, but more importantly, my problem is the same problem that everybody faces that walk on this planet. It's ignorance. And I'm not gonna lower my standards to walk in those muddy waters when I know there are people out there that got answers and solutions to a problem. When are we ready to take ownership of what really happened there? Because what I was taught in school wasn't the entire truth. It was only part of it. I had to go outside of the school lessons to find out what really happened in the world. So again, I'm encouraging our youth, because you hear me say this all the time. I love today's youth. They're fearless. I appreciate them. And I love them. I love the young people. I love their spirit and the things that they stand for. I love it. And now that I have some experience in the world, just like you, Mr. Bucher, I've traveled around. I've been fortunate enough to travel around outside of my environment. Mm-hmm. So I can see it for what it is. Now, we take ownership of what happened, then and only then can we sit down and have a truthful conversation. Now, and until we're ready to do that, Rick, I'm going to sit on the sidelines and watch this game that's being played, because I know the game. I know the media. I know professional sports. And I know that the billionaire owners who own the sports realize really what's at stake here.
As an aside, hearing you refer to yourself as Grandpa Armstrong on the porch in his rocking chair, watching the youth parading down the street is somewhat amusing to me, because you still look like you're not 21 anymore. You don't look 21 anymore, but you look like you could pass for your 30s, maybe your early 30s. So you doing the I'm the geezer and I love the youth of today is funny for me on that front. But what you say makes a tremendous amount of sense, and I appreciate that. I don't know how we pivot from something that is that serious into something that's a little lighter, but I'm going to attempt it now. I may get an invitation to Cirque du Soleil if I actually pull this off. But guys like Josh Smith, Lance Stephenson are not on rosters. Veteran guys have demonstrated that they have NBA level talent. And I got to thinking about the agent side of BJ Armstrong. Both experiences as a player, as a teammate, but now as an agent, what if they were your clients? How do you go about finding a place for them when there seems to be this cloud over them or this reluctance by whether it's coaches, administration, whatever it is? These guys have a reputation, fair or otherwise. As an agent, when you have somebody like that, how do you go about landing a place for them to play and then maybe ultimately living down that reputation?
In order to be in any relationship, you got to be able to tell them the truth. And here's the truth.
Yeah.
If those were my clients, you are at a place in your career where your problems off the court are far superior than your talent on the court. You know, when I look at these guys, players, they're good kids. It is up to us adults to be able to speak truth to our kids.
Josh Smith is 30 years old.
I get it. He may be 30 years old, but we're all underdeveloped in some area of our life. We all are.
Fair.
Now, there are only a certain type of personality that can handle that type of player, that type of personality. Now, I take, for instance, Dennis Rodman. Everybody couldn't coach Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman was traded for Will Perdue. Dennis Rodman was able to play for Chuck Daly. He goes out to San Antonio, but then he can perform.
And Bob Hill.
Bob Hill, yeah. And then he can perform for Phil Jackson. Now, it's easy on the surface to just look at the coaches. It's easy for that, to look at the coaches and say, oh, well, Chuck Daly was this player, you know, this excellent coach, the late Chuck Daly. And he was a phenomenal coach. And then we can look at Phil Jackson. Oh, he was a phenomenal coach. The one thing that players always respect, though, is other players who govern the team. And those two places where he performed at a high level, they had two strong personalities.
Right.
Isaiah Thomas, who governed the team. When you have people who take ownership of the situation, in every championship caliber, I don't care if you're playing football, basketball, baseball, whatever it is you're doing, when you take ownership of something, it means something to you. Isaiah Thomas, whether you like him or whatever it is you think of him, Isaiah Thomas was an excellent leader. Michael Jordan governed and policed that team in Chicago. Make no ifs, ands, and buts about it, what was important to him. Dennis Rodman fell right in the line when you have that type of leadership. When I see players like Josh Smith, it reminds me of J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith in the wrong environment is misunderstood. J.R. Mm-hmm. Smith with the Cleveland Cavaliers is a championship caliber player. Now, what happened is LeBron James has taken ownership of that team. That team is governing itself right now. Every time I look up, I hear they're going to work out, they're doing things as a team, whatever it is you think about it. If those were my guys and I had clients, I'm looking for strong personalities that can handle them. Pat Riley is a strong personality. Greg Popovich is a strong personality. That doesn't mean that these kids are bad kids. What it means is it's our responsibility to tell them the truth, which is, you know what? Everyone can't coach you. Everyone's style isn't made for your, even though you have talent, no question about it, but you have to find a place and an environment that fits your personality. They're struggling to find jobs because, frankly, their problems now are bigger than their talent right now. So at some point, hopefully for those two guys that you mentioned, I hope they're able to play in the league, because certainly it's not an issue. They don't have the talent to do it. It's finding the right home and the right situation for them.
One of the other elements that you have as an agent is you talk to NBA teams. You also talk to teams overseas. It's finding the ideal, I would think, the ideal place for your client to play and make the most money that he can, where he is happy with his life. To me, that would be the ideal. Is I want you to maximize your earning potential in this business.
It is but it's not that simple. And the reason it's not that simple to maximize is because what I've learned over the years, and I learned this as a player, and it still holds true, if you aren't developed off the court, if you're not happy off the court, I don't care what's going on the court, you'll never be happy.
Yeah.
You'll never be happy. Player can make $25 million, but if he is underdeveloped and not happy, that means nothing. So the big thing is getting people to understand who you are and ask the question that we all have to answer, Rick, who am I? And if you can answer that question and be truthful with yourself, it gives you an opportunity to maximize. Because if you're happy off the court, the money is just like, that's just icing on the cake. You're like, wow, I'm getting paid to be happy. I'm getting paid to do something I really enjoy doing. And that's a very rare occurrence. So instead of focusing in on the money, let's focus in on you, because if you're happy and you're doing what you really love to do, it's going to come through. And if that comes through, all the other things that you could ever imagine will happen because of that, but not the other way around.
So I'm just wondering, from a business standpoint, when you're talking to general managers or owners or whoever you talk to here in the NBA versus overseas, how is it the same and how is it different?
There's two things I try to cut right through the chase. Where are you at with your team? Either you're a team that's making money or you're trying to win. You're doing one or the other. Either you're rebuilding or you're trying to win. So I cut right through it with these general managers. Which one are you trying to do? I want to put my kids in the best situation that I possibly can, which is to give them an opportunity to compete. That doesn't mean you're going to win every game. But I want them to have the spirit that we all have as young people, that I have a chance. I just want to have a chance to go out there every night, Rick. Do you know how special that is to go out there and have a chance to say, you know what, probably won't win every game, but I want to have the opportunity to try to win a game.
But you divided the two. You said, are you making money or are you trying to win? Are you always trying to put your guys in a position where the team is trying to win?
Absolutely.
But how many teams are realistically trying to do that in any given year?
How many teams? That's a loaded question. How many teams actually have the opportunity to win the last game of the season? Or how many teams are actually trying to do it?
How many teams are actually trying to do it? And it's not just winning the last game of the year. I know you're talking about retooling, rebuilding, and all that. But there's a way of, we are trying to win. We're trying to win as much as we can now to get us closer to being able to win it all. I believe there are teams that do that.
This is where it gets gray for me in the NBA. 10 to 20 in the draft gets gray, all right?
Okay.
The reason being is because once you're in the middle of the pack, how are you going to get better? And then that becomes a major issue. The worst place to be in the NBA is like 10 to 20, because you're not the worst team, but you're not the best team.
Well, it starts with the culture of the team, doesn't it?
It starts with properly evaluating your team. You have to properly evaluate what you have. You may not have a top 10 tier talent. You have to know that. You have to know that and be realistic about where you are and who you are.
Right.
Now, if you want to sit here and portray that player X, because he averages 20 points a game and you're 18th in the draft, okay, then you're not being realistic. Well, we have a superstar player. Because the only way you're going to have a superstar player is by wins and losses. That's not where you're at. You have a good player on a bad team is what you have.
Right.
But who's actually going to come out and say that? So now you're getting into, this guy's just trying to make money. He's trying to sell. We have a 22-point score. Okay. You have a 22-point score. Being a good player on a bad team is not impressive. Because if you are being a good player on a good team doesn't always translate into numbers. Being a good teammate is something, once we can establish and properly evaluate what we have here, a very truthful basketball conversation, which isn't hard. It's not complicated. It's only when you start trying to sell me something that's not there that I put up my flag and go, okay, I see what you're trying to do. Let me move on to the next situation. Because 10 to 20 is very, very tricky.
Compare that to when you have a client and you're going to put them overseas. Like, that's a whole different animal, because now you got a variety of countries, a variety of situations. And I would venture to guess, like, you're so familiar. You live this NBA thing. You know a lot of the people here, right? You don't know as much about these teams, their history, or the GM that you're dealing with to the level that you do the NBA. So how do you handle that?
First, I have to get the marketing of the NBA out of their head. The NBA has done an incredible job of marketing itself. The marketing of the NBA is incredible. Everybody is going to be a superstar. You would think by this summer, everyone is making $100 million in the NBA. You would think that the NBA is just passing out money like it's just, oh, everyone's going to get paid. You know, I love this. Everyone's going to get this. Everyone's going to get this. Everyone's going to get drafted in the lottery. Everyone's going to get this. Now, the NBA does an incredible job of marketing itself. I won't send a player over to Europe until that player understands the business of the NBA. I'm going to say that again. I won't send a player to Europe until that young man understands the business of the NBA.
The NBA or professional basketball?
The business of the NBA.
Okay. But you're sending him overseas.
I will send him overseas because he's ready to, because he understands business. There is no player that can survive on $19,000 in the D League trying to get, hoping to get called up. That's before taxes, or $26,000 on an A contract or whatever that is. And when that player is ready to understand that there are 400 some jobs here and you can't survive on $19,000 or $26,000 before taxes in the D League, hoping, then we can have an honest and forthcoming conversation and understand the reason that we're going over to Europe. And more importantly, for you to be open-minded to embrace where you're at in your career. Everyone can't play in the NBA. So is it better for you to be the 15th guy on a roster and don't play and be in the same position next year? Or is it better for you to go over to Europe and actually create and seek your true value of what a player of your caliber should be earning? It is only when they understand that question will I even entertain to send them over there, because the NBA has done such an incredible job of marketing itself that everyone thinks they're going to be in the NBA. Do something, Rick. Next time you go and you go to a college game or high school game, ask every kid there, how many of you guys are going to make it in the NBA? The guy who hasn't played he hasn't played since fifth grade is going to raise his hand and say, I'm going to be in the NBA. It's the most amazing phenomenon. It's a phenomenon to me. Like, you ask every player. I always ask every team that I, you know, friends of mine who coach it, ask me to stop by and say a few words. How many of you guys are going to the NBA? It's so amazing to me that every kid will raise his hand, whether it's in college, AAU, eighth grade, fifth grade. So once that player is able to look at himself for what it is, then I will entertain them because they will have a successful career moving forward in Europe.
So do you not move your clients to the D-League?
I do not recommend the D-League. I do not.
But there are guys who get called up from the D-League.
Well, it's yes and no. Guys get called up who are already part of the team system. You know, we had 50 call-ups this year. These guys are already being invited to camp. Under contract, they're already being invited to camp. And the D League, that's why they that's why every team now, if you notice in the fine print, why every team now has a D League team, because that's why they're being invited to camp. So they're not going to invite someone to camp and not develop them or coach them and then not have a place to put them. And then when they do get called up for a 10-day, that number goes up and the D League says, oh, we've had more call-ups than we ever had. Well, the guy is already in NBA camp right now. That rule and that system needs to be fixed so that it is competitive with Europe, because you can't tell me that we can't find a place to develop our players and have the right to earn a living. Earn a living. Rick, these kids are making $26,000. That's the best contract I can get in the D League. How are you, Rick, going to survive on $26,000? Okay. And make a living.
How does a player do that?
They have to come to the realization of what this really is. You have to understand the business because of the question you just asked. Well, the D-League is an opportunity. Well, how are you going to do that with $26,000? How are you going to do that? It's impossible. But you have to see it for yourself. So again, I'm not here to destroy your hopes and your dreams, but here's another way for you to get back to the NBA where you can actually make a living for yourself, but more importantly, create your own value. If you're a $1 million player, why are you going to take less money to play in the NBA? That doesn't make sense to me. If you are a $1 million player before taxes in Europe, why are you going to come back here and take the minimum at $540,000 or whatever the minimum is right now? That doesn't make sense to me. So again, I encourage these young men to think about their future, to understand the business, but more importantly, think about where you want to be 5-10 years from now. But more importantly, to begin to plan and think for yourself outside of, well, I just want an NBA because I love the game. No, I can assure you that no one is owning these teams and the NBA aren't running because they love the game. It's a business and they're making business decisions. And it's important for every player that puts on this uniform to recognize the business of sports, the business of basketball, especially at the NBA level.
Well, the business of doing a podcast is not too short, not too long. And there were a couple of other subjects that you wanted to get to, including what the locker room conversation is like when we talk about the best player at each position.
Rick, we got to go here. We got to go there. I got to have that. I got to know some real locker room conversation. We've had serious topics real quick.
Go ahead, set it up. Because you wanted to bring this up.
The thing that, you know, players in the locker room is, you know, you have all these awards. Who's MVP, sixth man, what have you, you know, most improved. But the real question in the locker room for every player who's ever had an opportunity to play, who's the biggest talent at his respective position? And I used to love this conversation. Who's the biggest talent? Let's go through real quick.
Yes.
Not who's the MVP of the league. Who's right. The biggest talent? And let's go through the five positions quick.
I have to go Russ Westbrook.
Why?
Who are you going? Who are you going with? What? Because physically, pound for pound, the greatest athlete, arguably the greatest athlete in the league right now. And as far as being able to, the ability to play at both ends, and overall the pressure that he can put on a team. I thought about Steph because I think Steph is a better passer, but ultimately, I don't think he can do all the things that Russ can do. This is where the talent thing becomes difficult.
I love this. The talent is okay. Go ahead, Rick. I'm listening.
Because there's the mental part of the game. The decision making, like when you talk about talent, there is the physical talent, there is the requisite, the skills. When I think talent, I think of there's three parts. There's just the physical ability to do everything and to dominate the position physically at both ends of the floor. Like Russ, the pressure he just puts on you because of his speed and his strength and his explosiveness, there's nobody other than Derrick Rose before he got hurt. There was nobody who could come close to that. So there's that. Then there's just the requisite skill. Can you shoot? Can you pass? Can you handle? Can you correctly choose what to do at the appropriate time?
I love this. See, this is okay. This is awesome. See, this is a real conversation. All that other stuff, who's an MVP? This is a real conversation. This is a real conversation.
And also, it's when do you do it,
oh,
right?
I love it. Go for it, Rick. Go for it.
So Russ's decision-making when the game is on the line is the huge hitch here. For me. But I check enough of the other boxes, and I may just be stupid on this. I can't let it go. I can't let go of all the things that Russ does and that he's capable of doing to say that he's never going to check that last box or two. And the way, what he has in those other boxes is so beyond what the competition has, I give it extra weight.
Okay.
So Russ is my guy at the point guard position.
Okay, I want to go quick since we were supposed to go quickly through this. Russell is an excellent choice. And the reason that this is always fun is because everyone has their different criteria how they look at the game.
Sure.
The biggest talent is Derrick Rose.
Okay.
And the reason I say this is for the following. Derrick has a unique ability to manage the game. Personally, I admire any player who can do this. Can you have an effect on the game without scoring? That's my criteria. When I first saw a young Jason Kidd,
yes,
I thought, wow, this guy's a genius. I love Tim Duncan for that very reason. I love Magic Johnson. I love players who are massive talents and can affect the game without scoring. Ben Wallace was a phenomenal player to me just for that very reason. Like, I'm just intrigued by those type of players. So as far as a talent—
You know who else was? Rasheed Wallace.
Rasheed Wallace was another guy. Derrick has clearly, you know, the last 2 years, health and all those things. Yes. When healthy, he can affect the game and win the game without scoring.
Yeah. Now, for full disclosure, as people know, you are his agent. And I know that you are, and most people, they don't know you the way I do. I know that you're honest. Like you don't say something because it's your client. You don't say it's because you believe it. Now, but here's the thing. The point that you make is why, and why I have in some ways carried the flag for Derrick, because there are so many people that have a platform that talk about the game that do not understand that aspect of it, what you just talked about, that they just look at the numbers, they look at things that don't grasp who he has played with and the number of games that he's won, the number of times he's taken teams. When I look at the talent around him, including the team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I look at what he had and what he was working with, And people will focus on his numbers. But I look at what he was able to get out of those other guys to make them look good. And there are so many people that don't appreciate that intangible aspect. So, but how can you go there? Because he hasn't played enough the last 2 years.
He's the biggest talent. We're just saying right, talent. Listen,
you know what?
If we want to talk about injuries.
Number two, who's your shooting guard?
My shooting guard is Paul George.
I don't know if he's a shooting guard, is he?
Paul George is a shooting guard.
Hey, he was my power forward.
That's okay. Paul George is a two guard. This kid can put it on the floor.
Yeah.
This kid is a two-way player. This kid has a little post game.
Yeah.
And more importantly, he can do a lot of different things in a lot of different ways. I just think the kid is a huge, huge, huge talent. I think he's a huge talent at the two position. And I love the fact that he is accepting the responsibility of being that guy. Yeah. And I'm watching him evolve right in front of us. And I thought he made a big step as I watched him again over in the Olympics. I think the kid is a huge talent. A huge talent. I don't think many people see him enough there in Indiana, but he's a huge talent.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Klay Thompson is my pick. Has a post game, can shoot it. I think his handle is underrated. Again, a guy who I think his decision-making can improve, but physically at the position. And I'm not making Paul George a two, basically. I wouldn't argue with you if I was making Paul George my two, but I'm making Paul George my four. The guy that I wish was more in the conversation, and I can't put him there, once upon a time I did, is Carmelo Anthony. Because I think when they came into the league, to me, Carmelo Anthony was the more talented player when he came into the league.
You know, I had the fortune of seeing a young Carmelo Anthony in high school. That kid is a professional scorer. He could always score that ball. He is an incredible talent just because Melo is a big time, when I mean big time scorer. He can score in a lot of different ways. And I love Melo because Melo plays what we consider on the streets. He plays bully ball. Melo will bully you down there if you let him. He's going to check your body parts, you know, so you better come prepared to play when you defend him. I think he's a big time talent. I love him, but I think LeBron is just, I mean, as a talent, yep. I just think he's an overwhelming talent.
LeBron James is my small forward as well. So my power forward is Paul George. Who is your power forward?
You know, Anthony Davis is a major talent at that forward position.
Okay. So now you really are throwing me for a loop.
why'd I throw you for a loop?
Because we talk about, like, the importance of winning games.
No, we said, who is the biggest talent? That's what we said. We didn't say winning. You're bringing distractions into this conversation. We're in the locker room. We said, who is the biggest talent? Now, do you want to say who has the biggest impact on winning? Okay, that's a different conversation. We said, who's the biggest talent? That's what we said. Who is the biggest talent at their position? That's all
but
we said.
Your reason for picking Derek as your point guard, in large part, is because of how he organizes and manipulates the game. So tell me how Anthony Davis, as talented as he is, why I don't see that talent impacting the game. How can you be talented? How can you be talented if you can dribble, you can shoot, you can rebound, but you don't know how to apply that to the game so that you win?
Excellent question, Rick. Excellent question. For us who've played this game, and I say for us, who've had an opportunity to play and compete at the highest level, we'll understand this. I've never seen a great big man without a great guard, because that big man has to depend on someone to throw him that ball. Okay? I didn't learn this lesson until I saw Mr. Jerry West draft Kobe Bryant to go with Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal, think about all the people he played with at the guard position. He played with Kobe Bryant. He played with Dwayne Wade. He played with Steve Nash, Penny Hardaway. He figured it out. See, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar figured it out. He played with Oscar Robertson. He played with Magic Johnson. When you have a big guy and you match him up with an outstanding guard, you get something special. Now, with no disrespect to anyone that's played the guard position there in New Orleans, you put Anthony Davis, one of the, let's say, elite guards in this league, you're going to get something. You're going to see something you haven't seen. This kid's a big-time talent. He's a big-time talent. Now, it takes, in this game especially now, is a guard game. It's a guard game now. Look at the impact Curry and Clay and CP3 and Russell and Derek and all of these great guards now are having on the game. You put him with one of them guards, and you're going to see something, Mr. Bucher. He's big-time talent. But now, I'm just saying, that's how I see it. Now, that's what makes this a great argument. Now, who's your guy?
At the four?
Yeah.
It's Paul George. Because what I like about him, and obviously this is sort of a, this is how the game has evolved. He can play point forward. He is out on the perimeter. He can face up. He can handle. But you know who else can? Anthony Davis can. Anthony Davis has the requisite skill to play that way. Anthony Davis doesn't have to wait for a guard to do all that he can do. He doesn't even have to wait for a coach to do all that he can do. And that's my only frustration with Anthony Davis. Because you're right. Talent-wise, that kid can do everything. But I am reluctant to say, you know what, if only he had this. If only they would get him this. If only they would use him that way. You often talk about me being stubborn. Like, I have known all along. I have always considered myself better than I actually am. You can't tell me that, no matter who I'm going up against, you can't tell me I can't jump. You can't tell me I can't handle. I'm going to find a way to beat your ass, okay? I am firmly of the mind.
I love this Rick Bucher. He's fired up. He's fired up right now.
I will find a way to beat your ass. And you may kill me the first, like, if it's, you could beat me 11-0. Let's run it back. I'm going to get to 11-1. I'm going to keep adding it. And you know what? Even when you beat me 11-0, I don't think you're better than I am. I am stupid that way.
All right, okay, all right? Okay, we gotta go. We gotta move on now. We gotta keep this going.
But that's why, like, Anthony Davis has all, if I had Anthony Davis's like requisite skill, oh God, forget it. I don't even have it, and I still think that I'm better. So that may be a character flaw on my part.
Okay, let's go to the five, Rick. Who's your five guy? Who's your five?
DeMarcus Cousins is my center.
You and I agree on that. I love the boogeyman. The boogeyman has some talent.
That's one of those, like, if we're going to tie this to the very beginning, people are distracted by the optic. They miss on how good and talented this guy is. And I honestly believe, like with many talented artists, he is talented enough and he's good enough that if you're selling him a song that he does not buy, that's really hard for him to buy it because he's too good and he's too smart to buy into something that he sees as not being the truth.
I'm going to tell you something. If the boogeyman puts it together, he's the only big that I've seen that small ball doesn't bother him. And if he ever figures that out, he's going to make a run in this league because that kid there can put it on the floor. He can shoot the three. He got a post game. He's athletic. He can rebound. He got a big body. He can play screen roll, pick and pop. He can play every phase of the game. If the boogeyman figures this out, he's going to go through a run in this league because he's a big time talent. And you know what, Rick? You know what? You know what's amazing is, you know, as you go through the list, you know, I love Russell, right? I love Russell. And as, you know, you're listening and all the things, and that's what makes it great. Russell is right there in the conversation. But we left off Kevin Durant. We left off a guy who, to me, is an amazing player. He could also have been considered at the four. He could have been considered at the three. He could have been considered at the two. You know, this is some amazing players in this league. And that's the thing that makes you appreciate this league, and especially when you have an opportunity to see these guys. These players are amazing, amazing players. But in saying that, I appreciate it because those are the conversations that I love. I love it when we can have it and people get passionate about it. And as you can see, everybody has their own different criteria of, you know, who's who, yes, and what's what and what's going on, and based on your understanding of the game. And that's what makes sports great. And that's the one thing I do miss when before the game is you would be able to discuss and talk about who you thought was the best talent, because players always evaluate who the best talent is.
And as passionate as it can be, this is what I always find funny when we have the awards or when these things are discussed in public and somebody will say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know basketball because you picked so-and-so. And I laugh at that because I'm thinking, dude, it's all subjective. It's all based on what you
value.
Wait,
hold on. You mean what I'm saying is not true?
It's your truth.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Rick. Now, wait a minute. You didn't say that. I mean, you know what? This is great. And if there's one thing that makes sports great is to love, you know, I love it when people, you know, are passionate about, you know, what they see and talk about players. And that's what makes it great. So I appreciate you doing this exercise. This is great. I love this. As you know, I love stirring the pot a little bit. And this is great. I love to hear your...
We may have to break this podcast up into two parts because we've gone so... We've gone so long, but
for sure.
Anyway, thank you for joining us here on the BJ and Bucher podcast on The Cycle. We will be back with you again next week. And I believe we will be discussing the Hall of Fame, including the inclusion or the induction of Yao Ming and the impact that he's had from a global standpoint. And I'm really interested to get BJ's viewpoint on the globalization of the game and how it has changed the way the game has played, or has it? Because we're seeing the game evolve in different ways, and in some ways it feels like America is causing the rest of the world to play our way, and yet in other ways you could make the case that Europe and the game outside of the United States has also impacted the way the game is played in the NBA. So all that and more on the next podcast. BJ, thank you as always.